Attention, please. Places for top of show. Places for top of show. Hello, and welcome to Twins Talk Theater. We are Cindy.
And Stacy.
And we're talking about theater, backstage life, and all the excitement that the audience doesn't get to see.
Enjoy the show.
Hi, welcome back to Twins Talk Theater. Today we're thinking about talking, well, Stacy and I have been talking about stage management and the difference between opera stage management versus musical stage management versus theater stage management. And so we were thinking about talking about that, but then we realized that I am not the best person to talk about that because I was trained in musical theater and traditional theater and then kind of transitioned to opera, but I never really learned the difference between the two. And so it was a very smooth transition for me. And every time I go into a piece, I kind of just see what that piece needs, what the show needs, what the location needs, and then I do all the paperwork and I stage manage according to that specific show. So in my mind, I don't designate between opera and theater versus musical. To me, they're all the same thing, stage management and stage management. So then we started thinking about, well, why is that? Why do I consider it all the same thing? And I think it's because for 6 seasons, I worked with Long Beach Opera, which is known for doing experimental or newer works in experimental venues. And so their director of production, Darlene, treated stage management and production as a whole as if it were a theater department and not necessarily an opera, because, again, her background was in theater. And so we both kind of just treated it as theater. So I never really can tell you the difference between, well, this is what you do when you stage manage opera. This is what you do when you stage manage theater. I could tell you what to do when you're stage managing a show with kids or a show with union members. So that's leading us to what we're talking about today, which was kind of a roundabout way of talking about it. But my topic of discussion for today is spaces and the place that we produce shows. So I've kind of, in my head, broken it up into 3 different sections. The first one being a traditional space, what you would usually consider, you know, you go to a theater and you're in a traditional proscenium space or maybe a thrust stage. The second one I'm calling transitional spaces, which you're in a theater, but you might not be producing the show in the same setup that the theater is originally in. And then what I'm calling our third section, which is more of an experimental space or a non-traditional space, which is producing in a location that was not designed or built to be produced in. I was trying to come up with something with a T for the third section so that I had 3 T's, but I couldn't think about it. So we're just going to talk about traditional, transitional, and then experimental spaces. And when Stacy and I were chatting about this a little bit before we started the podcast, I was telling her how much I enjoy working in the experimental, non-traditional spaces. And she laughed at me and said, all the reasons you like it is all the reasons I hate doing it. So
that's exactly
I'm glad
right.
Stacy's here with me so we can compare notes and be why stage managers might get excited, but technical directors might absolutely hate it because of the way that these spaces work.
And a number of the shows we've worked on together at mostly Long Beach Opera, we worked on together as you, the stage manager, and me being crew or technical director or props or volunteer in both traditional and non-traditional spaces. So
Right, exactly. So I actually have a few examples here where I wrote down the show, but I wasn't actually on that show because Stacy was on a few shows I wasn't on. So she might have to talk about those things. So with traditional spaces, when you go into a theater and you go to produce in a theater, everything kind of already exists for you and you already have these parameters that are set. You know where the audience is seated. You know where the numbers are. You know the number of seats you can fit in there. You know how many lights exist. You know the dimmers. You know parking. You know you have dressing rooms. You know lights are going to work when you turn them on.
You know you have bathrooms.
You know you have bathrooms. You know you have running water. You know you have all these things when you walk into a space. And so it kind of, I don't want to say it's non-artistic. It's artistic, but you already have these set parameters that you have to work with. And you can still make small changes. You know, if you need to add lights, there's always ways to add more dimmer racks or to get more power. Sometimes it's expensive. But for the most part, you know what you're working with and it's kind of easier to hit the ground running. When you do what I'm calling transitional spaces, which is producing in a theater that was built to be produced in, but not necessarily the way it was meant to be used, The two big examples I have of that is a few years back, Long Beach Opera, and they actually remounted it after that, did Difficulty of Crossing a Field at a traditional, at the Terrace Theater in Long Beach, which is a traditional proscenium house. I think it seats like 1,800 people. But what we did was we built risers on the stage and put the audience on the stage, and then we used the orchestra pit and built platforms in the audience, which is where the performers and the orchestra and myself calling the show all were. This one was just, it was an amazing piece. It was absolutely stunning. The music stunning. The production was stunning. I'm really happy I got to do it. So I kind of wrote down a list of advantages and disadvantages of this. When you do something like this, you still already have your bathrooms, your dressing rooms, your grid, your lights, your power. You still have somewhat of a parameter to work with, but it's not necessarily in the way you want to. So we still had lights that existed above the stage and facing the stage, but the way we built the platform out into the audience for the singers, there was no way for us to focus lights into the house because it wasn't built like that. And so most of our lighting in the house all had to do with, do you remember what they were, Stacey? We put plexiglass platforms and then we lit from underneath. So when singers were standing on the platforms, you could see them. And then in aisles, we actually had some sort of lighting.
I think
the aisles.
You probably had booms with lights attached to the booms so they could be at different heights. And underneath, I think they were LED PARs. So you could change colors and PAR was more of a floodlight instead of more of a spotlight down there to change it. I mean, the plexiglass was a great idea, but then again, everybody was lit from the side or under instead of being lit from the top or the front, which is a traditional view. So it gave a much different look on the actors and what the audience could see because it was more sculpting and not so much you can see their face.
Right. Which worked for this piece because they were supposed to be a little bit creepy and in these fields. And we had a whole bunch of fog, so you couldn't really see them very much anyways. So even though we had the electricity that we needed and we had the power we needed, we still needed to get extra lights and figure out cabling and run all that. Same with there was no actual backstage for the performers. And when I called the show, I called it from the middle of a house, literally like standing in an entryway with a music stand and a cable running from my headset. Similarly, when the audience, to get the audience to the seats, they had to go backstage through the scene shop area to get to their seats, which was a great experience for them, but it caused a little bit of a headache for the crew and the director of production, because then you now have to make sure that all these areas that are usually just seen by, 20 crew and crew members, you have 400 audience members walking through the backstage area. So it was a big thing to clean it all up and make sure that there was enough ushers to lead them through and that they weren't getting in the way of crew members or machinery and all of that stuff. So, but it was a lot of fun. My other example is when I produced Hydrogen Jukebox at Tri-Cities Opera this last season, we were in our black box space, which at one point used to be an actual performance venue, but it kind of had fallen apart and we hadn't produced in there in a long time. So we are transitioning it back into a performance space. So it was a black box. We had it all painted and stuff, but we didn't put our singers on stage. We did kind of, some people called it a traverse theater. Some people called it a railway kind of setup where our singers, our performance space was down the center of the room and our audience was on both sides. So similarly with this, we didn't have any way to light them. So we actually had to hang new light.
A whole grid.
What am I saying?
You had to hang a whole grid and run all the cables to it.
Right, exactly. And so then we had to get more cables because we were running cables in different directions. So that took a little bit longer to figure out. But at the same time, now that exists, so we can do that in the future. We also just realized that we had to have two projectors for super titles because in the past, one projector always worked because you had all audience facing the same way. But now we have audience looking in different directions. So we had to get a whole new projector, figure out how to connect the two projectors together, run it super titles. Where were we going to hang it? Balance it, make sure it was all the same size, which took me forever because one projector was bigger than the other projector. And because the audience walked in through the space, again, you have the audience walking on your stage to get to their seats. There's no way to go around. So they're literally in your face walking across the set. So our ASM had a hard time making sure that all of our props that were preset, audience members didn't walk on stage and be like, oh, this looks like a really cool pin, and pick it up and move it, because then the actor won't be able to find it later.
One of the annoying things about being a tech side is now I have unknown people walking in my space, touching my stage, tripping over cables, anything like that, which is one of the reasons I don't like the found spaces, is because I don't know what people are going to do. It needs to be the same. I need to know who's there. I need to protect it.
But again, these kind of spaces I kind of consider transitional spaces, because everything that the building physically needs is still there. We still have the bathrooms, the dressing rooms, the power, the parking, all of that still exists in this space. So you don't have to think about all that. Tech has to think about it, but I guess front of house really doesn't, because that exists. So then that moves us into my third and most favorite, and
my least favorite
is what we call the experimental non-traditional spaces. Some people call them found spaces. This is a place where you go and you find a location that was never meant to be a performing arts venue, and you turn it into a performing arts venue. Some great examples are when we did Hydrogen Jukebox at Long Beach Opera, which was in a big warehouse, which was 90 feet by 200 feet
with just big cement. Rafters and hardly any power, and a bathroom not close by.
Nothing. Long Beach Opera also did, was it King Geyser?
Yeah, King Geyser.
That was in a park.
We were in the park by the Queen Mary, in the middle of a park. No bathrooms at all, no power, parking
no
you
stage.
Had to drive to, no stage. We were on grass. So worrying about when sprinklers turned on and off and when the airplanes flew over, or if the Queen Mary decided to blow its horn, it was right in the middle of the show.
always right in the middle of the show. It's also where I am right now, which is Philadelphia Opera's. They're calling it 017, which is their brand new festival opera for the summer of 2017. And I am the production supervisor for these two pieces. One's a Monteverdi piece, which is Baroque. And the second one is a brand new piece. Well, not brand new. It was written a few years ago, written by Beecher, I'm going to mess up his name, but Beecher is the guy who wrote this piece in response to the Monteverdi piece. So Opera Philadelphia wanted to take opera to the people and make it something that's part of the city and involved in the city. So this piece is being produced at the Philadelphia Museum of Arts. The Monteverdi piece is being produced inside the cloisters inside the museum. And the Beecher piece, which is I Have No Stories to Tell, is being produced on the Great Staircase right when you walk in the museum. So this, I guess, could kind of be considered a transitional space a little bit, in that we do have parking, there are bathrooms, that kind of stuff already exists, but in the sense that they've never actually produced theatrical pieces. They do a lot of corporate events. They do a lot of like dinners and talks. Our opening night, actually, Jane Goodall is going to be there 2 hours before we open the show to do a presentation on another part of the museum, but in our exact same location. So we have this huge turnover between her presentation and our performance on opening night, which is great. But these spaces, so what I love about these spaces is that you're limited, but you're not limited. Like, you can set up a stage wherever you want. If you are in the park for this King Geyser at Long Beach Opera, you know, you could move 10 more feet this way. Or if you chose to have your stage be 10 by 20 or 30 by 50, there was nothing really stopping you except for money and permits. But
yeah,
for the most part, like, you don't have walls. You don't have anything constraining you. So you can kind of change and edit and go as you want, which I think some designers and directors and singers really love, because it's very, what's the word that Darlene always uses, or directors always use? Organic. It's a very organic way to work. Which I think is why I like it as a stage manager, which is weird because as a stage manager, we're very
organized, like it to be the same every time, structure.
Yeah, and also like OCD, like things, have to be very meticulous. But that gets boring sometimes. So I love these organic spaces. I love being able to say, you know, we need to set up lights. Well, to me, it's all a big puzzle. So we need lights. How are we going to make lights work? What do we absolutely need for lights? How do we get power to these lights? How do we set them up? All these things is what I, as a production manager, as stressed as I would get about budgets and making it all work, it was just so much fun to figure out how to make all these pieces come together. And to me, so much more rewarding at the end to say, I put this piece on and I helped come up with everything, or, you know, we came up with this thing from the ground up. To me, it's much more in depth. I'm much more involved in the process, which is maybe why I like it more as a production manager, because I feel much more involved in the artistic element and not just like, well, here's a venue. I could already tell you, you know, when curtain speech is going to happen, when cues are going to happen, when the curtain's going to come up, because those are all kind of set. And these kind of organic, non-traditional spaces, you don't really have that. So you get to play with it and you get to do what you want and figure it out as you go. So it's exciting, but it's challenging.
It is definitely more challenging because there aren't, like you said, anything there in King Ghazar. Because we were in between two parking lots, a kind of, not a freeway, but a bigger road, and the Queen Mary, there was a lot of things you couldn't control. People walking in from outside. We couldn't fence off the whole area because there was no way to fence off the area. So people just walking by could sit down and watch the show. Then they're not paying for the show and we're not getting tickets for it. The people who were sitting in the chairs kept sinking the chairs into the grass because the grass was too wet. Well, we couldn't not water the grass because the grass would die. So what kind of chairs do we need to get between first weekend and second weekend where people stop sinking into the ground and getting stuck because they're not used to sitting in a chair or walking in high heels on grass? Masking things backstage. Couldn't possibly build a backstage. So everybody was just seen, whether you were on stage or not on stage. Curfews. We weren't supposed to be making any noise after 10 o'clock at night. Well, great, but it's hard to focus lights between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock when the sun is down and then be done because we're not supposed to make noise and you can't have bright lights shining. So there's definitely a lot more restrictions and things to consider. Every night we had to pack everything up. So I had to rent a trailer to put everything in, which was great. We put everything in a trailer. Well, I thought that the trailer was being picked up Sunday night because that's what time I told him the trailer should be picked up. Come Sunday night at strike, nobody shows up. I call, I try to get a hold of people, I call emergency numbers, and come to find out they're not open on Sunday. They don't plan to pick up till Monday. Well, nobody told me that. I told them I wanted it done Sunday. So I had to go find, it was like midnight on Sunday. We had to be off the lot by like 9 a.m. on Monday. I had to find somebody who could, a truck driver, who could move a 25-foot steel container, like a cargo ship container, from the grass over to the parking lot because it needed to be moved before Monday. Well, at midnight on a Sunday night, that's not the easiest thing to do. We might have left a couple gouges in the grass because trying to pick up a steel container on a truck bed was a big thing. So there, you know, things to worry about, whereas on a normal space, you're like, great, we'll just put it in the loading dock. Done. Problem
solved.
You just
pull up, you know, when I work at the same theater multiple times, you pull up all of your crew information and your tech schedules and everything that you used last time, because it's pretty much the same. You know the crew, you know the when they have to take their breaks, you know what the light plot, or you know what the light, not the plot itself, but the, you know,
where their circuits are, where their dimmers are.
Right. You know how you're going to get a truck in there to load and unload. You know about how many people it takes to unload the truck. So all that stuff is kind of set. Whereas when you don't have a venue, especially a venue that you're familiar with, it's literally like starting from scratch. There's been a number of shows where I look at my traditional paperwork for a scene change paperwork, and you just throw it out and you just start fresh because you're like, this isn't going to work because this is not a traditional venue. You know, you got to figure out what works best with that production and that space, and you go from there. So I when Stacey was talking about the curfews and stuff for when they were at the park, we're running into that now at the Museum of Art, because it is this amazing museum, but we can't interrupt museum hours. So we aren't allowed in the museum until 5 o'clock every night. And I believe all day Mondays because they're closed on Mondays. And we also have to strike all of our stuff every night and then set it all up the next day because the museum has to operate during the day for their patrons to come in and out. So we're trying to build into our schedule, you know, it's going to take us 2 hours to set up every day and an hour to strike every night. So that really limits, and we're only in there from 5 to midnight because their crew can't work past midnight and we need to have their crew there to get in. So we can really only, you know, tech 3 hours a night because it takes the rest of the time to load in and load out. Thankfully, we don't have to take it to a truck. We do get a room in the museum, so we just have to push it in that room, but we aren't allowed to, and our crew is not allowed to. So the museum has a crew that is pushing everything to make sure that their museum stays safe and all of their exhibits stay safe and then they're not being damaged. So we have to wait for their crew to come, like, move everything into our space. And then once we're in the Great Hall or in the cloisters, then our crew and the stage management team can come in and set everything. We also have to have a conservationist who's coming in our second day of load-in. Once we have all of the stage set, some conservationists from the museum are coming in to make sure that we're following all the rules and guidelines. So because we're on the Great Staircase, Great Stair Hall, which is all stone, we can't have certain material on it. Like, they don't want anything sharp, anything that will damage the stone, anything that will scrape it. So our props people are spending a long time making sure that everything's smooth or has padding or has fabric underneath it. So when things move around on our stage, which are the steps, that nothing's damaged. So there's all these different elements that we're trying to negotiate and work with and make sure that all these different people are happy in order to put this production on. When you look at the production itself, if we did it in a traditional venue, it would be super simple. There's only 6 performers. There's each piece is only 30 minutes long. There's no costume changes. There's no hair and makeup changes. You know, when you look at it that way, it's really, really simple. But when you look at where we're producing it and all of the elements that go into getting it produced at a museum and working with the museum, it kind of doubles the amount of production that we have on it. And I'm sure doubles or triples the budget based on budgets that I've done in the past. So, but it also means more people are getting work.
That's true. But also you said that because you're in a museum, you guys have to deep freeze everything you bring in the museum. I'm not entirely sure how that works with, like, your paperwork and all, but you have to deep freeze your props and items you're using in there?
We don't have to deep freeze everything. What they're concerned about is antique-y items that are organic material. So if there's one of the shows is set, I think, during World War I. And so we wanted antique newspapers and magazines and pictures. But because those antique things are old and have possibly, like, parasites or decaying or anything like that, those things have particles that can then get into the air and possibly damage the room that we're in, which is the cloisters, which, you know, is a actual cloisters, I think, from like the 1200s or 1300s. So the things we have to deep freeze are organic materials and anything that's antique. If we go out and buy a brand new burlap sack that's still in its bag, we're allowed to bring it in the museum because it doesn't have any, like, bacteria on it. So it's not going to damage what is in the museum already. So everything that was antique and organic had to go into the deep freeze. I believe it was at least a month before we loaded into the space, which means our director now cannot add anything if it's antique or organic. She can add things that are metal. She can add things that are brand new, but she can't add anything for the antique-y look because our month has already passed and it doesn't have time to go in deep freeze. Similarly, things that are painted have to have a 2-week drying time in order to get into the museum because, again, you have, if you're, say you're spray painting something, some spray paints, some materials have 2 weeks until it's completely dry and it's no longer emitting particles into the air. So they, even though it might feel dry to the touch, there's still chemicals coming off of it. And so we can't bring that into the museum. I don't know how they check this for people walking into a museum. I mean, if I went out and dyed my hair, there's nothing stopping me from going into the museum. But I guess because we're going to be in there for a long, an extended period of time, there's all these rules we have to follow, which I think is just like bringing a new exhibit in. The wild is what's in there right now, which is why Jane Goodall is coming. You know, I'm sure they had to go through a similar process. And if they had anything that was old or that could possibly have bacteria on it, then they probably all had to go through deep freeze as well, because the museum itself owns a deep freezer. It's just this huge room that has a whole bunch of stuff in it that people are freezing in order to bring into the museum. So it's really limiting what our director can add. So all of this had to be decided before we even started staging. So we just had a production meeting yesterday and, you know, it came up, well, what can we add now that we're staging? And it's pretty much anything like that's metal we can add. As long as it doesn't have rust on it or anything that's brand new, we can add. But if it has to be distressed or if it's antique, can't add it. So it's making it really easy for our assistant stage manager, because it's not, she's going to have a lot of ads. Everything's already set for that for the most part. It's just tracking it.
Yeah, I guess that makes it easier. I mean, I'm used to directors on, you know, 2 or 3 days into tech, which is only a week long tech, being like, how about we change this umbrella to a different umbrella? And that thing needs to be aged, and this is going to be a completely different object. It's like, oh, right. Okay, well, I guess so. But with you, it'd be like, nope, can't do it. Isn't frozen.
Yeah. It's not frozen, and it didn't have 2 weeks drying time, so not going to happen. But what I love working, I think the other thing I love about working in different spaces is you get to experience those spaces. You know, when you're, the show you did at the park, people can come in, bring picnics and eat at the park. The show we're doing, or when we were at Crafted for Hydrogen Jukebox at Long Beach Opera, there was a brewery across the street and there was a whole arts and crafts fair on the other side of the building. So you can come in, you know, and go walk through the crafts fair and then come see a show. At the museum, we're actually opening up the armory section of the museum, because both of these pieces have to do with war and the effects of war. And the armory section of the museum happens to be right in between the two places we're performing in. So they're actually opening that section up, bringing in curators and bringing in a cart that has armor on it that people can actually touch. So we're opening the museum an hour before performance that audience members can come in and go through these parts of the museum and talk to curators and get a tour of the museum and then watch these shows and then hang out afterwards to see more of the museum. Or we're going to have a bar that's open. You can get food and drink while you're there. So it's, you know, you get to experience all these things at the same time, which I think is Opera Philadelphia's way of including the entire city in this festival. You're getting all these people to come and enjoy all the arts that they might not, you know, opera singers or opera people might not go to a museum, or they might not go to the Barnes Museum, which is where one of the other pieces is being produced. But now you can pull from all these different groups and enjoy it all together and create art, which I just think is awesome. Plus, we now get to go to the museum for free, so you don't know how much we are all enjoying that one.
That's very true. I'm expecting more pictures the next time you're there. It's also really interesting because a theater is about, it's art. And art is about community and people and not just
collaboration.
Stand alone.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the only reason we can do theater is if people come and watch theater, which is the only reason a museum exists, is because people have to come to the museum to see it. So I think that's also a great way to bring people together and experience different things and do a crossover, because maybe you find you really like armories or war things or Renaissance paintings or something, which you might not have known because you just never would have gone to a theater if you didn't. Well, not that many people just go see opera for fun. Most people know some opera, but maybe people are coming to see the opera because they like the museum, and that also cross-pollinates, gets people in, gets people interested. I mean, I want to touch armory. I love touching things.
I know. I mean, I would just stand in the Great Stair Hall because it's so gorgeous. Every time I walk in there, it's just amazing. And to think that I can actually, like, produce a show in that space and to create art with a whole bunch of other artists and then to present it to this audience in this space that's absolutely stunning and amazing. You know, it's just, it's really exciting. I mean, I've been in gorgeous, beautiful theaters, but it's, there's something different about walking into a Cloisters that's 400 years old, you know, and knowing that you're now going to produce art in that space.
Especially since in Europe, they have, I mean, not that America doesn't have history, but in Europe, they have hundreds of years. In America, right. We have 200, 300, depending where you are. In California, man, if it hits 100 years old, it's ancient. So we don't have that. Exactly. So we don't have that kind of history coming into a place. Whether it's new or old, we just don't really have that kind of history. So being able to walk into a museum or walk into a place that has an entirely different feel in history is very different. And though it provides a lot of challenges and annoying things, it also gives it a very different feel. It can be the same show done in a million different spaces, and it would be different every time because of the space, because of the actors, because of the design. But in, like you said, in a traditional space, you have black walls, you have black curtains, you have set lights. Whereas in King Ghazar in the Park, we had grass, and we had the ocean, and we had sky. So we didn't cover any of that up. We used that, and we played with that, and it became more of a natural feeling to it than opposed to something else. Whereas when we did McBee, or, you know, we don't want to say the words, even though neither of us are in a traditional space or found space right now. But when we did McBee, the opera at Long Beach Opera, we did it in a cruise ship terminal. And it was great because it was a found space, which you like, but then they didn't want it to look like a found space. And so we had to pipe and drape the entire area so that everything was blacked out. We had to build dressing rooms away from the audience because the actors didn't want to mingle with the audience while getting to and from their dressing rooms. We had to do things. We took a found space, but then we made it look as much like and act like a traditional space as possible, which kind of defeated the purpose of being in a found space. But that's what they decided to do. So there's also, I guess it's kind of the opposite.
That was the evolution of it. I know, like, original talks were to actually use the space a lot more. And then I'm not sure if it was permits or, you know, fire marshal or why it turned into what it did. Like I said, it's much more organic. But yeah, it was very much you walked through this found space and then you walked into what we created as a little mini theater.
Yeah, with risers that people sat on, with chairs that attached to each other and had numbers and black all the way around you, and it looked like a regular theater.
It just, like a black box.
Just took a lot more work to build a black box in the middle of a cruise ship terminal.
At least we didn't have to strike that one every night.
That would have taken hours. Would have been terrible.
We would have designed it differently.
Yeah. It's kind of like the opposite of what you were talking about in the transitional space, where it started with a theater and built something in it that was not traditional space, whereas on this one we started with with a found space and then built it to look like a theater.
Turned it into traditional space. Yeah, I never thought about it that way.
I mean, it wasn't proscenium, it was one of the railway ones that you were talking about with audience on two sides, but it's exactly it. We had to build doors and we had to put exit signs on every door and we had to have risers with 6-inch steps for people to walk on and handicapped areas and all that, which is not, that's exactly what you have when you walk into a found space. I mean, a traditional space.
Yeah. Some of it, and I think, I don't remember what Ghazar I was about, but I forget the show that Long Beach did at an aquarium. And they did that because it had to do with water or something. And so the way that they found it, which is also why War Stories is being produced at a museum, because it is about armor and history. And so it just makes sense to do it at a museum. So I think I also like the idea of taking a show and then being like, what does this show remind me of? What space can we find that complements this show? Which isn't always the case. You know, when we did, both times I did Hydrogen Jukebox, the location didn't necessarily say anything about the show. We made it about the show, you know, but to actually find spaces that complement the show, I think is really exciting as well. And a big headache for those people who have to find it and get all the permits and stuff. But I just think it adds so much more to the overall like artistic idea. You also have to start like 2 years in advance sometimes to figure out how to make it all work before it actually comes together.
But absolutely. The cruise ship terminal, we had to know who was coming every night, and they had to go through a guard gate and get checked in to be able to even come into the cruise ship terminal to watch this show. So we couldn't really do tickets at the last minute. There were no walk-ups. Everybody had to be known and have a name and be on a list, which also required a lot more work of knowing who was coming and what night they're coming. And if they transfer tickets at the last minute, that information had to then get from the box office, which was across the city, to the people at the space, and then add names and all that. So it was definitely a bigger headache to plan ahead of time and who's going to be there and whose people do what and who gets what permit and who's allowed in the space and out of the space and at what time and not even clocking in and out, but you had to physically go through guard gates to get on and off of this location.
We have to, at the museum, we're not allowed to wander anywhere. So they're stationing, I believe it's 2 guards in every single room. So if we need to go anywhere, even if I have to go to the bathroom, we have to let a museum guard know to take us to the bathroom or to take us to the dressing room or to take us between venues, because they don't want us just wandering around and possibly, you know, 2 galleries over damaging something. So
no, that's priceless artwork. You can't touch that stuff.
Right. So they're very strict about that too. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We don't have to give names right now, but we do have to check in when we get there, get a little pass, and then be escorted everywhere when we show up. So we're still trying to figure out how that's going to work for tech, because we're trying to tech 2 shows in 2 different places in the museum. So both the director and the lighting designer have actually asked for their own personal guard, so they don't have to take time trying to find one in order to run between the 2 spaces, because they're like, we can't afford wasting 10 minutes to try to find someone to walk us back and forth. So if we just have someone standing next to us, that saves, you know, we don't have time to wait for that. So
yeah, because we're not used to that. I mean, everyone just runs around and does what they need to and goes here and there.
Right.
And finding people would take forever.
Right. So that was on our list yesterday of things to figure out how many people we have at the museum and, you know, if they have to physically walk us somewhere, if they could just watch us go. But yeah, it's going to be interesting when we move into the space. But again, I think it's just going to be so rewarding. And I think it's going to be really moving for the audience as well to see it in that location. And then to be able to walk around the museum and learn about the actual art in that area and how it relates to the pieces that we're producing there. So we still just need to figure out how we're going to get the lights and sound and power to work there. But, you know, we've always made it happen in the past.
Yeah, that's what theater is, you know. Here, do this. Okay, give me a couple minutes to think about that and we'll come up with an answer. And then we'll go to the producer and say, is this within budget? Which is always a separate question.
Thankfully, I think he is also going to be on site with us for the first few days, so he will be easy to get answers from. But yeah, I think that's why I love doing what I do and why I love stage management. I mean, I do love working in traditional spaces and doing big shows, you know, calling Nixon in China at a traditional venue. It's very exciting, and to have all those cues, and sometimes it's really nice to know what your parameters are and what set, you know, because then you could focus on all the other things. So I'm not saying that I don't like those venues. I'm just saying I get a real kick out of doing experimental and non-traditional spaces. And it might be because I come from a theater background, which I think it's a lot more common in theater to do those kind of things. It's less common in opera. It's starting to transition that way. So I think it gives me a little bit of my theater background, musical theater background, tech theater background, and it lets me kind of incorporate all of that into when I stage manage and production manage shows. So to me, it's a lot of fun. And when I was interviewing for this position, when I was talking to their production manager, she was very excited because she was like, it doesn't make you nervous? And I was like, of course it makes me nervous, but I've done all kinds of things like this. And so, you know, she was like, done, you're hired, because if it doesn't stress you out that I'm talking about four different crews and four different unions and having to load things in and out every day and tracking props, then we're good. We can take care of the rest of it.
Yeah, it's so. Definitely a different beast. They're both beast, but it's definitely a different one.
It is, but that's why I said to me, you know, in the beginning, and I said stage management is so fluid. I walk in and I say, you know, before I even, I mean, I know if it's a musical or an opera, but I don't think of it like that. I look at the space, I look at the people, I look at the designs, I look at who I have on my production team. Do I have three ASMs? Do I have no ASMs, you know? And then I just figure out what I need to do as a stage manager in order to make that happen, which is why I don't distinguish between the different genres. And so I think that's what I also do when I walk into a space, you know, if it's a traditional space or a non-traditional space, I walk through and I kind of take inventory of everything. And then I look at the designs and figure out what needs to happen. And then we just figure out the giant puzzle on how to get there. So it's all just super fluid. And you kind of know where you're starting and you know where you need to end. And
you know the timeline. Sometimes,
and you know, yeah, right. You know when you're going to open the show. And so that's all you have. And if you know the budget, that's even better because it gets you to make better decisions. And you just got to figure out how to get there. And so it's all a big puzzle and gives me my math background. So that's what makes it fun. I'm not the kind of stage manager that wants to do BOEM for the next 50 years. Actually, if I never do it again, I'll be super excited.
Yeah, I probably will never do BOEM. I say that now, but I just don't do much opera.
You have it a little bit easier, but yeah. Maybe I'll do a BOEM if it's in a found space. But or actually, there was an all-female, I believe it was BOEM, produced in New York last year that I knew somebody that was in it. And I thought, well, maybe I'd actually like that one, but I didn't have a chance to see it.
Yeah, completely different topic of changing gender and time periods and everything on a show and how it stays the same and how it changes.
Right, but it makes it different, and you're not doing the same thing over and over, you know? I could probably stage BOEM in my sleep because it's so traditional, which a lot of people like. And there's stage managers and singers and directors that make a living off of it, but I get my kicks out of the other things, so that's what I do.
Yep, you're weird. Good job.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay, so I think that's pretty good on spaces versus spaces. I think that's what we should call it.
Or our interpretation of spaces versus spaces.
I like it. We can throw some science there and it can all be relative. Probably to a stop sign somewhere. Who knows?
Thanks okay. For listening.
Yeah, well, thanks.
See y'all soon.
Bye. And now I hit stop.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to listen to more podcasts or to follow us so you can get updates on all future podcasts, you can find us on iTunes or Google Play Music. You could also rate us on iTunes and let us know how we're doing. You can also check out twinstalktheater.podbean.com or follow us on Facebook at Twins Talk Theater.